Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's just another week with where I'm hacking at APIs involving the weather.
Sure. I mean,
good times.
It's a week that ends in Y.
Yep. That's it exactly. I used WeatherKit. It was fun. I wrote a little blog post about it. I don't know if anybody cares. I don't know if anybody else wants to use WeatherKit, but you know, if you're an Apple developer, you know, you got access to a weather API and 500,000 free calls. Share them with your friends. I made a little weather widget thing that shows me
it's
the
cool.
forecast. It's fun.
I, you know, on the one hand, I think it's super cool that Apple is offering this and that, you know, I think it's great. And I think the stuff they talk about, especially if you watch the WWDC sessions that reference this, the fact that it's now data that is basically omnipresent and you can put in an app, even if your app is not a weather app, right? Like, I think it's very clever of them to think about interesting ways that this information could be useful to your app, which I think is great. But I also think that it's, you know, it also showcases to me a missed opportunity in some ways on their part. Like, there's a weather app on the Mac now. And to my understanding, it is basically, you know, the weather app from iOS/the iPad now.
Right.
It's not like it's particular. Like, they could put stuff in the menu bar, right? Like, but
they
that's
could.
Not really. They don't, right? They don't take advantage of. This is the weird thing about adapting the iPad and iOS apps. Even if they try to make them very Mac-like, there's cases where you're like, well, on a Mac, you want this to be used in this way. And that's not really an option that you give us. So, you know, nice that niche exists, because then you can make something and that's kind of a fun project. But it also feels like, why isn't Apple already doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in my case, I've got one menu bar widget that's got the current temperature. I already had the current temperature at my house, right, for my weather station. So I basically tacked a forecast on and a little icon showing what today's rest of day conditions are going to be, a little sun or rain, cloud or whatever. But, you know, other apps, I think what we are going to see is other apps just using weather data, right? Like, I think that's one of the things Apple expects from putting this on the platform as an official Apple API and granting a certain amount for free. And I'll grant you, you know, 500,000 API requests is actually a lot if you're me. It's not a lot if you're an app developer.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I think about, like, you know, Fantastical has weather built into it, and that's a subscription product. And I don't know what weather source they're using, but I would be surprised if they didn't ultimately just use WeatherKit to do that. And you get, you know, I'll also say, though, what they didn't do is have the weather queries happen on your device and let the apps just query your device, right? Like, they could make it that any app could say, I want weather data. And then it starts to collect weather data, and like so it's in the system, and it would pool the calls. So instead of having, because the way it's going to work now is that if you have five different apps that use weather data, WeatherKit will be called five different times. Maybe I don't know. Maybe with the Swift UI version of it, you actually will. It'll be pooled. Certainly if they're using the REST API, which, you know, I am, because I'm not writing an app, it's individual calls. It's just one of those things where it's like, it could be a centralized system service where every phone and every iPad and every Mac knows the weather where they are, and then apps can look into that. And that's not what they did. They built it like Dark Sky, where you need to integrate it and pay them for the calls. And I mean, what that means is that somebody else is paying for it and not Apple. But it's interesting. Anyway, I do think that it will be something that we'll see in more apps. It's just going to be kind of funny because you're going to have to pay for it basically one way or another in any app you use. So that'll limit its effectiveness. But I think it's cool that it exists. And I think it's really cool. Like I said, I'm doing this over their web API. They did that so that any website or Android app or Windows app or whatever that was using Dark Sky could still use Dark Sky. You just make a little web request and send it your latitude and your longitude and a bunch of like secret codes and public keys and stuff
the
headers.
I know,
and then,
you have to figure out that stuff. I laughed when you said that because I spent a lot of time doing that for other API things that we've worked on projects together.
JSON web tokens are
that's a whole That's a whole thing.
They're more secure and they're better in lots of ways. But again, I'm sort of used to the like the Purple Air API. I mean, you just put things in a URL, right?
Yep,
you're like, exactly. You literally put your key in the URL, not secure at all, right? But you put your key in the URL and it goes out. Whereas this, you have to, you get a private key from Apple and you get a secret code and you generate a public key and put it in the header of every request. And it's very secure. But it's way more complicated. But right. You know, in the end,
exactly.
In the end, I got what I said in my story, and this is the part that made me really excited last week. Is I have spent a long time playing around with historical and current weather data from my house. Now I have the future. It's like weird. It's like, whoa, wait a second. Now it's forecast data. What is that, and how does that work? And
right, because you're. Your weather station can't figure that out, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are different. I mean, right? Because in the end, you just have the weather software would have to query somebody's weather forecast API, right?
So
now I'm
and the weather station I have kind of does that transparently, where like if you go to your NetAtmo dashboard,
right.
It gives you a weather forecast, but it's just pulling from a forecast for your local area, right? It's not any more accurate because it's coming from your information.
Exactly. Although I have noticed that some apps that pull weather station data do the smart thing and other apps don't, where it's like, let's say the forecast is that the high is going to be 65 and then it's 68. Some apps will be like 68 right now, high of 65. Other apps will be like high of 68.
Yeah, right.
They'll be like, no, I knew that all along that the high would be what it is right now. I totally knew that.
This was an issue I had when I tried to do, I don't remember if I wrote this up at one point, but I did a plugin for SwiftBar that shows the current UV.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't query that from the open weather. I saw your mention of that yesterday. I was like, oh,
you can,
maybe
you
I
can,
should.
Yeah, you can totally. I'll give you my.
But. Yeah, for the open weather one, you can't because it's not part of what they offer free. Like, and if they do, I think they just give you the midday UV, which is not helpful.
Apple will give you current conditions with UV.
Yeah, I know. But there is an open UV project as well, which I found, which does do it. But I think the issue was I had to ratchet down how often it checks because there is a limit to calls.
If you want,
I text every 5 minutes. It's fine.
I give all. I'm offering to all six colors employees the access to the developer account API. Yeah, so you can have half a million calls a month if you want.
Okay. All right. I mean, you just got to not check, I guess, every second.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, really. Yeah. If you check once every half hour or hour, I actually am caching my results because I decided it's not really necessary because at 500,000, it doesn't matter. But I'm doing a thing where I have a script that's running on my server that caches the JSON file from the server and makes the charts. And then all the thing that I'm on my iMac does is it loads one piece of information from. Or like two pieces of information from Apple off of that cache JSON file, and then you know the rest of it it takes the chart that's on the server. It's not
right.
It's like it's not hitting Apple at all. But you could because it doesn't matter because it's fine. I built the caching when I thought it was 50,000 a month, but it's 500,000 a month. It's not a problem. I could have all of my friends could hit it every hour and it would be fine.
Challenge accepted.
Oh. Well, I'm going to take back my my offer. I mean, it's 16,000 queries a day, so
that's a lot.
You know, it's 700 queries an hour. It's a lot. It is a lot.
You can do it.
You and 10 of your friends could do it every minute.
Well, that sounds delightful. Okay.
So, it's weather. It's fun. It's just a fun project. It's having learned Python last year and having messed around with JavaScript for my widgets. Using Scriptable, and so much of the internet now is, or at least like data files on the internet is JSON, right? It's just parsing those data files that come out, and so I already had the skills basically to do this stuff. It was just it was fun because it was like, oh, now Apple's got weather data, and I got it for free because I'm already paying for that developer account. So yeah, it's a fun little project. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, it's anybody out there who. At the very least, it's like a ramification of Apple doing WeatherKit and having a web API. So it was kind of fun to do.
Yeah, that's clever stuff.
Your Backpage column this week is the Backpage is always funny, but I felt like it's funny because it's true this time.
You know, every time I write it, somebody, a reader very nicely sent me a DM saying they really liked it and were amused by it. And, you know, that they, and I think I said, every time I worry, this is going to be the one that's going to be a dud. And he said, the line about there being weather comments in the future hit too close to home, to which I asked him, oh, does my mom text you too? because anybody, I guess, who has a parent or a loved one who's like, oh, I looked at the weather in your area. It looks like you got a big storm coming. Yeah, I don't know. It is funny because it's true. I think there are a lot of things. It started out mainly for me with the stage manager comments about, like, I'm sitting there thinking, It's kind of good in some ways that stage manager is a mode, because it is something that no one is likely to end up in by accident. And I think explaining stage manager is going to be a bit of a, you know, a thing for your less tech savvy friends and family, because it's weird. I'm just going to say it. Stage manager is weird and it's not bad. But, like, I think it takes a little time to sort of grok if you are used to the iPad way of doing things. Like, I know my mom is pretty, like, she loves her iPad. She's super comfortable with it. She does a lot of stuff. But I feel like, I've had conversations with her. She's like, oh, I got stuck in split view and I don't know how to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I have to, like, run her through that. And I'm like, man, stage manager is just going to be a departure. So I don't think it's something she, that's what I'm saying. That's why it's good. It's a mode, because then they aren't going to stumble into it and just be like, oh no, what happened to my apps? They're all small and everything. It's like, yeah, it's weird, right? If you're used to those full screen apps that you've had for the last decade, it's going to be strange. So, I think there's a lot of features, as there always are. You sort of hit those levels of both the features that come out and people accidentally discover them or forget about them and then find them years later, which is also a thing that I really enjoy. This has been this wave occasionally of these, like, TikToks especially, of like, oh, did you know you could do this amazing feature on your iPhone? And invariably, it's something that has been there forever, but that just, you know, a lot of people don't know is there or don't use. So I think it's always interesting to try and see this from the perspective of somebody who is not as steeped in everything that's going on as we are, because we, spend all our time dissecting all of this.
Yeah, the lock screen is interesting, because the challenge is that people are going to have to, like, get it.
Yeah.
But once you get it, I think it's really compelling.
It is the thing that is most making me want to upgrade to iOS 16 on my phone. I'm committed to waiting for the public beta on that one, but it is the thing that I think is most interesting, because it is so personal, right? It is something that is so, like, linked to your identity. I think already people's wallpapers are the thing that you can customize the most about your phone, and Apple is not a company that is big into customization, right? Like, you know,
that was my piece in Macworld this week, was the same thing, which is like Apple's. Doesn't really want you to customize it, I think, because Apple thinks that they know best.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the problem is, 2 years ago with the widgets, people used widgets and shortcuts to do just wild
up
customization, right? And I think they took notice, but their response is they are inching toward customization in the most conservative and careful way possible. So the lock screen thing, it's like, yeah, you can make things on the lock screen, but use our generators, or you can pick a picture and we'll use our analysis of your picture to offer different colors or tints for it. Like, we're not going to show you everything. If we think it's bad, we're not going to let you pick it. And from Apple's perspective, it's, we're helping the user. And from my perspective, I would say it's, we're not going to let the user embarrass us by making our product ugly.
Don't make our product look bad.
And I think the challenge is that Apple views the iPhone as in a weird way, their property, and that it reflects upon them. And so they don't want to have a situation where you can make your iPhone look spectacularly ugly. So they're going to help you make a good decision, right? Lots of air quotes there, lots of sarcasm. Mm-hmm. But they are, I mean, if... And what I lay down in that Macworld story is you got the home screen. The home screen is tied to focus modes. Focus modes also control, so the lock screen and the home screen and focus modes all go together. Separately, there's light mode and dark mode. But I start to think, like, surely these are all coming together, right? Sure. Right. Like, surely we're going to go to a place where Apple offers a certain amount of holistic kind of like system theme choice. And that it's not, again, it's you could choose, it's not you can choose any color as long as it's black, but it is like choose from our eight themes, six themes, whatever it is. Like choose preset items within our preset list of items for our themes. Like that's how they will do it, but they seem to be headed down at least that direction, which is great because it means that our phones are going to be more personalized and customizable, and that's what people like. People like it.
Yeah, people do like it. I think I'm appreciative of the stuff that is being offered. I hope that it is more wide-ranging in the future. I never really did the whole I never really got into all the widget customization stuff that people were doing, though I found it super cool. And like I just every time somebody would like have these elaborately themed home screens, and I think to myself, I don't have the time or energy to do that. But I'm glad that it's A, possible, and that B, somebody else has actually gone through all the trouble to do it, because it does allow an unprecedented level of customization on the iPhone. For those, I think what's funny to me is, you know, you will remember, as will many of our readers and listeners, the classic Mac days of customization, right? Which were, even before there were apps like Kaleidoscope and stuff like that where you could do theming, like, I don't know. I remember having like sounds that would open when I opened folders and custom icons on all my folders all that stuff.
My first experience with the Mac was in college, and it was obligatory that you install SoundMaster.
Yeah.
And attached sounds to every item in the interface that my beep sound to this day is a sound from SoundMaster, a person's voice saying beep. But yeah, SoundMaster, that was the whole thing. And I had friends who had the Oscar the Grouch extension where Oscar the Grouch would come out of the trash can and sing a song when you empty the trash. Right? Like that was from the start, your wallpaper, you know, your desktop background, your sounds. It was always about personalizing something. Like this is, I think it's just fundamentally human nature. It's like, I want this thing to feel like mine.
It's like an old quote that I think might be from our friend Lex Friedman, and I'll attribute it to him, which is hell is using other people's computers.
Yeah, it's Lex Friedman or John Syracuse, maybe.
One of them, probably. Yeah. But it is true, right? Like, I mean, we've all customized our computers to the point where if it's things as simple as, like, where's your dock? You know, does it hide? You know, and you're like, use somebody else's computer or a public computer. Like, why is it like this?
Oh, yeah.
I want my computer the way I want it set up.
I know I've told the story before, but John Syracuse was in town for WWDC or something, and he was at the Macworld offices, and he needed to print, I think for a party, and he needed to print his boarding pass. So I said, well, come on with me to my computer in my office. And I didn't, as I'm walking there, I'm thinking, oh boy, John Syracuse is going to use my computer. He's going to judge me. And he's like, oh, look at all these things on the desktop. But the one that really got me is that I have natural scrolling turned on, and he has the old classic inverted scrolling, and he starts to scroll and it goes the other way. And he says, I swear, he says something like, oh, what are you doing? Under his breath, right? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, look, it's my computer. You want me to print it for you? He's like, no, I'll do it, right? Like, it's John. But it was that moment of like, you know, I like it the way I like it, and he doesn't like it, and that's fair. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't like his computer either. Take that, John, because he has his preferences. But that's the beauty of it. It's like when we talk about, you know, where's your dock and stuff like what's on your home screen. Like, everybody does get to personalize it to a certain degree. Yeah. But I think it's funny that Apple has this moment of like, we don't want to give them too much control because then it could be super ugly. And like, I get it. And there's truth in that. And they do help. Trying to help you not make bad decisions is okay, I guess. But I did laugh when I got to the beta home screen and I was like, oh, I can choose from four fonts, none of which I really like. Okay, I guess those are my choices.
Sorry,
they've decided
those
are my choices. I would like more choices, please, but they're not interested in that, at least not for this version of the beta. I don't know. But yeah, I think that'll be a much more, to get back to your piece, I think that'll be a much more pleasing new feature that people will actually like. And passkeys, I think people will just use. That's the beauty of passkeys, is like they'll just happen and be magical.
I'm so excited for this potential. It is one of the things, though, that makes me... I'm super curious to know how this... ends up rolling out, because this is a thing where, as with so many cases, it requires buy-in from the developer community in order for this to actually work. It's nice that it's a standard, so that's already good. So it is a cross-platform, you know, you can use it on the web, you can use it in apps, et cetera, et cetera. I think buy-ins from the app community will be pretty good, but my question is always the web, right? Like, and I think that's where the cross-platform standard part of it really potentially helps, is because you also have people like Microsoft and Google all signed on to this. Everybody, this is good for everybody, right? Unless you are a person who steals passwords, in which case it's not good for you. But everybody else, this is like for the companies, for the people who make the devices, for the people who run web servers, like all of this stuff, it's just good for everybody because it reduces the possibility of running into, you know, security vulnerabilities, having to remember passwords, having duplicate passwords. All of that's a pain, and it cannot come soon enough for me. But I think it will probably take, you know, it's going to take a couple of years to get to critical mass, but I'm kind of curious to see as the fall rolls around, now that something as big as iOS and macOS and the Apple ecosystem is signing onto it, whether there is sort of a groundswell of support for it. And my fingers are crossed. Because I have used it on, if you want to try it out, and I say try it out like it's a thing that you need to, like, you know, complicatedly do. It's not. But go to webauthn.io, webauthn.io. And if you have if you're running a beta, it just runs you through, like, set up a passcode on or a password or a passkey on this site and then log into it. And it's hilariously easy.
There's nothing to it.
There's nothing to do, which is why it's a funny demo. But I just look forward to that so much because, boy, passwords are terrible and they need to die.
Yeah, people are gonna be happy about it, I think, but I think it's just really gonna be more like you just need to explain to people, oh yeah, you don't need to worry about it anymore.
And
that's gonna be an interesting kind of leap. I do wonder also how quick adoption is gonna go. I would hope it will be fairly fast, but I think what I said on some podcast earlier this week, maybe Upgrade, was I was speaking to a user group. I spoke to the Diablo Valley Mac users group via Zoom. That's where I did it. I said, let me explain passkeys to you. And then I said, it's still probably going to take like 5 years for 80% of your logins to be passkeys. It's going to be one of those things where big ones that you use every day, that's going to be big. Like where everybody is like, oh, you can just use passkey for Stripe and you can use passkey for Google and you can use passkey for Microsoft. And like, you're going to get the big ones that are just knocked off and you're like, yeah. And then there's going to be like, but these three random sites that I use, this newspaper I subscribe to, my local newspaper, they haven't done passkey yet. And then it'll be like 4 or 5 years before they do it. I fear that that's the truth of this, right? It's just inevitably, they're going to be the sites where it's like, you know, and I've been there. I've been on the inside when, you know, at Macworld, we were like, oh, we need to put this thing on our list. And it's like hard to get it to be a priority. And there's other things we could do that'll generate revenue and et cetera, et cetera.
It'll be interesting to see if Apple is ever like, oh, we're discontinuing support for passwords. You know, 5 years from now, like, change, and do it.
I guess the question is, will Six Color support passkey? And the answer is, as soon as Memberful supports it, we will support it.
Yes.
Right? Because all of our login and authentication stuff is via Memberful. So.
Or WordPress on the back end. But
yeah, although I think Memberful authenticates WordPress, I think is how that works, is that you don't actually log into WordPress. You log into Memberful, and Memberful says, this is who this is. I think
I think I've been logging into WordPress.
That flow works. Well,
you know what? Mine's weird. Because I think I actually have two separate accounts. Because I have a WordPress account and a Memberful account.
We have to post on the site.
Yes, that's for us. I'm saying on our back end, you and I.
Yeah.
We need to wait for WordPress to enable it.
You and I have a hilarious scenario. This is just a total random backstage Six Colors thing, where I can see all of the member content, and I still have the sign in the navbar. And that's because we're signed into WordPress as a user who can post. And so there's an if statement in the template that says, if you're a member or you can post, show the member content. Because I was tired of logging in and out in order to see the different states. So now when I need to see the logout state, I have to do a private browser. Otherwise, I I don't. But but yes, most people, the way it works is that is Memberful actually hands something back to Six Colors WordPress and says this person is this person, and then we're done. So you don't have two logins. Occasionally goes wrong, but yeah, so that's going to be, that'll be the question. But I believe it will be a very similar thing where you'll say log in and it'll take you to Memberful and they'll do a passkey exchange, and then just you'll be validated. So I'll check in with them. Actually, it's kind of fun. I should ask if they've got that on their roadmap now, because I'm excited about it. Our audience will be on it. It'd be nice to not have a password anymore.
Exactly. I'm in favor. I did also want to say that this week we had a bunch, I think this was early this week, that Mark Gurman had a bunch of rumors and reports in his newsletter.
A combination of reports and him recapping things that he's reported in the past, I feel like. I don't know if there was as much new information there as
I was excited,
got excited
Jason,
about, but there's a lot.
Because the suggestion that an M2 Pro Mac Mini could appear sooner rather than later, because that is square in the wheelhouse of what I've been waiting for.
I think what he says, a Mac Mini with M2 and M2 Pro options, which is great, because that's the thing you and I have talked about a lot, which is, wouldn't it be nice if they made a computer that had an M2 with a built-to-order option for an M2 Pro, so that you could choose, you know, how much functionality you wanted, instead of it like, no, this computer has the Pro and this computer has the non-Pro, and choose, which is where we are with the Mac Studio and the Mac Mini and the M1 generation.
What I did think was interesting, if you sort of zoom out from all the stuff he talked about, is the timeline for all of this stuff. And I mean, I think there is a big question mark hanging over it with all the supply chain problems, which we talk about endlessly. But the targeting dates he was talking about for some of the things, like the fact that there might be an M3 Air next year, surprised me.
I don't believe it.
You don't think so? Yeah, I thought it was odd. I mean, the discussion seems to be that like there's M2 stuff coming this fall, which seems plausible. But like, if those variant, you know, the powerful chips, the Pros and the Macs and whatever are ready, like, I'm surprised they can ship them out that quickly.
Well, I think the supply chain thing has compressed everything, right? I think that's true. I think that the M2 Air that's coming out this month, it's July now, this month, that is a computer they wanted out last fall or this spring, and it's got, or early this year, and it got delayed. So I'm sure the M2 Pro and Max chip designs are done.
Oh, yeah, it's just fabricating them,
and
sure
probably being fabbed, but so that's why it's a lot to roll out. So do they want to, I mean, I think it is a question, like, do they have, are they going to have a glut of these M2 generation computers that they're just going to shoot out there, and they're going to try to get back on the page, on the same page as the iPhone and all of that,
right? Well,
with
that's
the M3.
That is the question to me, is that, is the intent for the Mac to be like the iPhone, where it's revving the chip generation every year, which
every
was
year.
Not a thing previously. Right. Like, it's more like 18 months or so, because it would stagger. You'd have
and
your laptops here. And
that's effectively what we got this time, right? Is an 18-month kind of gap. I think, okay, here's my theory. My theory is that they want to do it not necessarily every year, but they want to do it where they can do it. There are going to be leaps that they want to make. And we may be about to see that, right? Where the M1 is based on the A14. The M2 is based on the A15. So last fall's iPhone chips, and we've had to wait until June and July to get an M2 on the Mac. So that's a big gap. I think it's longer than they would have liked. But the M3, so the rumor is that the M3 is based not on the A16 that will be in the iPhone Pro this fall, but on the A17, which is a process shrink. But maybe that process shrink will be on the 16. It's unclear, but there's a process shrink coming from Taiwan Semiconductor. So they'll be on a smaller process, which means more power efficient, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the one you want to be on. And the rumor is that the M3 is going to skip this A16 generation and go straight to the A17, which would put it next fall. What I'm skeptical of Mark Gurman saying the M3s are coming next year is that feels like a late next year thing. And I learned from doing space stuff on Liftoff that late next year means the following year. Like late in the year means next year. They're like, oh yeah, late in the year. It's like, yeah, but maybe that means next February.
Right. I think the big question that hangs out for me still, and we've talked about this in the past few weeks as well, is the, you know, this, they set out that 2-year timeline for transition, and the Mac Pro is still kind of hanging out there. And they teased it right back in the spring when they're like, we're not going to talk about today, but it's coming. Can they hit that 2-year timeline? Or is this, my theory is it gets announced late in the year, shipping next year, and they consider that a win. That's my theory.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure they can ship it by the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't know, especially if it's an M2 Ultra or
Extreme.
M2 Extreme, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on what they can ship. It really, that it's going to come down to the supply chain, because there's like what Apple is willing to do and what Apple's able to execute. And they've been so good at executing for so long, but yep, the supply chain stuff has really made it hard for them. So yeah, the good news is they can announce it. I mean, they already teased it. They can announce it whenever they want. Yep. I wonder if there is a Mac announcement coming in the fall that will include it, even if it's not, like you said, shipping right away, where they roll out a bunch of other M2 machines. I think it's funny that I still can't decide whether the iMac is just kind of not being paid attention to within Apple, or whether Mark Gurman's iMac sources are bad, because Mark Gurman seems to not really have a lot to say about the iMac. His suggestion is that there's an M2 big iMac in the works, and that the M1 iMac might not get an update until M3, which I find strange, because the M2 chip is right here. Just put it in the M1 iMac, right? Just do that.
Think.
And this is the question that a lot of Mac users have, that we have to ask, that is an open question, which is, we just saw the 13-inch MacBook Pro, which is a weird computer, but we just saw it get updated in place with an M2. You would think that they could just do that to all these systems. Just like, at some point, you draw the line and you say, oh, the M1 iMac's an M2 iMac now, otherwise unchanged. Right? Because a system that you don't want to change, you just put the other chip in it.
Yeah,
now it's faster. It's on the current generation. Done.
The properties are not that different, right? Thermally and all that stuff, we assume it's pretty similar. Shouldn't require an extensive redesign. And one would think Apple, in the way that it structures building products, that it makes it very easy to do that, right? You'd think they would want to make it just very swappable from their perspective.
I would argue that also the M1 iMac enclosure had to have been built with X number of generations
years
in mind,
yes,
right?
Yes.
You don't build that for a one-off. So it's designed, I think certainly it's designed for the M2 to work in it just fine, right? And probably like several more generations after that, you don't really want to paint yourself in a corner if you can help it. So it's right there. So I would think
exactly.
That's my question. Is like Mark Gurman's like M3. I'm like that's. I am fascinated by that as an idea.
I agree.
Because
I thought
why would you
weird.
Not, other than unless you've got inventory, but they're generally pretty good at maintaining inventory as a sort of a just-in-time thing, why wouldn't you just swap in the M2 and say, well, this is what it is now, it's the M2, and I don't know. So we'll see. That's the thing to watch. Because the Mac Mini, you know, there's some rumors that the Mac Mini may get redesigned, but I'm unclear on whether that was people seeing the Mac Studio or what, because the Mac Mini's got a lot of cooling power in it potentially, so they could put an M2 and an M2 Pro in there if they wanted to.
It would sure seem, I mean, you know, it's been, so the iMacs came out last spring, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, that'll be about 18 months by October. One would think that's a pretty good cycle on which to sort of rev things.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know, May of last year. So sometime this fall, just put an M2 in the iMac. We'll see. And it is disrupted by the supply chain, but also it's the question of like, what's Apple's philosophy here? Because because what I want it to be is, well, yeah, once the M2 is ready, we just put the M2 in everything. And that's the end of the M1. I mean, not for like the MacBook Air where the M1 is holding down a price point, but like if you can, and it's a redesign, right, with better specs. Yeah. But something like the M1 iMac that is already been redesigned, its price is what it is, it is what it is, why wouldn't you take the opportunity, if you're Apple, at some point, just to say, bloop, now it's the M2, other than that you made a lot of M1s, but again, according to everything that we know about Apple, that doesn't happen. They don't have a huge surplus of chips.
Exactly. They're not going to be like, oh no, we are, let's just put, make a huge right. glut of these things. That's no, not how they roll.
It might be that the components that they use in the M1 iMac are similar, or that they would use in the M2 iMac are similar to the components that are in the M2 MacBook Air, and they look at it and go, you know, I don't want to create more demand for these components right now because I can
sure.
only,
yeah,
you know, I can only build X computers, and I just put out a new MacBook Air that people are buying. And if I do it on the iMac too, then we're both of those things yeah. are going to fall behind. That would be a reason exactly. to not do it.
Sure, absolutely. And that's already a struggle they're having in a lot of their stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you look at, I briefly had that consideration of, oh man, if I do want to order a, you know, an M2 Mac Mini when it comes out or something, I'm going to need a display. And then I looked at the studio displays and I was like, wow, you cannot basically get any of these yeah. for months. Especially if you want one of the non-standard ones, like a VESA mount or a yep. The height stand, like those are out in September now, mm-hmm. and you're like, all right, well,
I have heard. That
I'm not going to worry about it.
I have heard they sometimes show up in Apple stores.
Sure, but then you got to get, you got to be aggressive about it. And I think my point yeah. is, I would in some ways I would consider pre-ordering them, thinking a Mac is coming in the fall. And it's like, well, the, by the time the monitor arrives, uh-huh. all the Mac will be here, but. I don't now, you know, the possibility that maybe if an M2 iMac or an M2 Pro even version of an iMac would be an option. It's like, oh, I got to at least see what the field looks like before I commit
right.
to anything.
That's true. I was going to say you can just get that monitor knowing that there's probably going to be a Mac Mini, and you could also hook up your laptop to it and have
I know,
a little M1
I know.
Laptop.
It's,
and you can hook your iPad up to it maybe sometime. I don't know.
It's on the list of something yeah. I might do, but I just haven't. I'm not willing to pull the trigger on that yet.
I did get my Mac Studio last week, and I set it up this week. The one that I bought, and yep. so I've erased the one that's going back to Apple, and I got to box all that stuff up and send it back to Apple. But again, I laughed so much at their much longer than usual loan period for a Mac, and then I realized that I was going to run out of time in the long loan period. So I got it. It's here. I migrated. I have to endlessly set permissions because once again, you know. You migrate, and then it's like, oh, I need to ask you all the security permissions again. And every app, you reboot that time, and all your apps launch, and every one of them is asking for a million different security permissions on top of one another. And it is the worst. Good news, everybody, though. Good news on this front. macOS Ventura is even worse.
Yay!
So, look, the public beta, I think, is a time when they deserve to be judged a little bit more. So I'm not going to get into it too much here, but I'll just say that the system settings app in macOS Ventura is a disaster. It's actually worse than system preferences, which is not good. And the security and privacy one is a great example where, like, it's such a problem when these apps are asking for permission and you have to go into the system preferences and you have to unlock the lock and you have to check the boxes. And then in this new one, it's hierarchical, so you can't even, like, in the existing system preferences, you can click on each one of the preference types, one of the security option types, and see the apps on it.
Yeah, yeah.
In the new one, you have to click into it in order to see it and approve it, and then go back out, and then go into the next one and approve things, and then go back out. And what I'm asking for is, I think when there are more than one request, when there's more than one request, whether it's more apps or more an app with more requests, I feel like Apple needs to actually do the work of putting up like a dialogue that says, these are the things asking for permission. Do you want to grant them or not? Because it's making me do all of this user interface work. And I don't know whether like a migration is a great example where, like, I know you download one app and it asks for a couple of permissions and then you move on with your life. Even that is kind of complicated because sometimes they ask in a staggered way. Sometimes they ask all at once. But when you migrate, they all ask at once. And it's terrible. It's a terrible, terrible user interface thing that they could solve. And instead it's sort of like, no, just you're going to have to figure it out. There's 80 dialog boxes open and they all want to open system preferences. But you can't tell them all to open system preferences because you've got to go to system preferences and unlock it and approve it, and it's just not good. So I don't know what they're doing with that. I am very worried about the settings app. I appreciate that they're trying to do something new, but it's not better. And if you're going to do something new, it should be better.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah.
That's my
short rant for a developer beta, and it's early yet and yada, yada, yada. But I'm just saying it's starting in a very bad place. They're going to have to do a lot of work with that because it feels like really bad. Also, not resizable. It's like, yeah. The number one problem with the system preferences dialogue box is that, or system preferences app on classic, you know, OS X Mac OS is it's just a little tiny window from the days of little tiny windows. And it'll get bigger or smaller sometimes, but like you can't resize it. Well, there's more information in the new one and you can't resize it. So bad. So anyway, we'll see if they fix that. I'm baffled by it.
It is a weird choice, as so many things are. But I don't know, it's not done yet. So that's what I keep hoping.
It's not done yet. We got the whole summer. I think that we're going to see a lot of progression in center stage over the summer, and hopefully with the settings app on the Mac. But I'm a little concerned that their eye is not on the ball regarding the Mac. So I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I guess we will.
All right. Well, another week gone by. And it's July, and we're halfway through the year. I don't know how that happened, but here we are. I will speak to you next week from an undisclosed location.
Ooh.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be in a mysterious, secrets, undisclosed location.
A magical forest, perhaps.
Maybe.
Could be anything.
It could be
anything.
Could be, but I'll be there. I'll have a microphone, so we'll talk.
All right.
Until then. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.